I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from Dubai in the UAE, which has just hosted one of the biggest summits of the year, its annual World Government Summit that welcomed dozens of world leaders, hundreds of ministers, CEOs, Nobel Prize laureates, and thousands of attendees. That's the UAE, which has continued hosting unprecedented trilateral talks between Russia, Ukraine, and the USA. The latest talks followed the UAE President Mohammed bin Zayed's official state visit to Moscow to meet with President Putin of Russia. The R in BRICS Plus, as the UAE catapults its growing influence on the world stage. Joining me here in the studio is a speaker at the World Government Summit in Dubai last week. Dr. Victoria Panova is head of the BRICS Expert Council Russia, vice rector of HSE University, and Sherpa of the G20 advisory group, Russia's Women 20. Victoria, thanks so much for being here in the studio.
Hello,
for Going Underground.
Hello.
So 6,000 people, 35 heads of state, lots of ministers from competing interests. What was your first impressions before I get to the impact of BRICS on the guests at the World Government Summit?
Well, very first impression was like, oh my God, so many people all in one place, all from, and you could see they're from very different paths of life and from many countries. And it's not strange that UAE is hosting, you know, such a diverse grouping of leaders from all over the world, because people that were hosted did the summit there, not only heads of states, as you mentioned, but they also, not only ministers, but their leaders in their respective areas, be it civil society, be it academia, business, etc. So, and when I had this diversity, this plethora of different, you know, people and different opinions, ability to talk and make connections with them, but at the same time, very well organized. Something that you don't see very much in, you know, in at such big events, because I've been to quite a few, and this is one of the best organized all over the world. I can tell that.
In your capacity as head of the BRICS Expert Council, there are enough of the global south to keep you traveling nonstop. What about, I mean, obviously, this year, the shadow of war in this region actually hung over it. I don't know, were people probably not mentioning it on the podiums, but surely that shadow does hang over this region as the United States sends its huge carrier task forces to the Gulf?
It definitely is maybe more behind the scenes than on the scenes. And you know that this forum was more devoted to AI, to the current technological challenges that people are facing.
Ironically, so, being used for these weapons.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, so it's a dual use, unfortunately. So, but definitely, but at the same time, you would think, how come this is not spoken out more? Because, you know, there's so many things happening, and it's not just the looming war in the region, right? Not only the Abraham Lincoln coming over with their other carriers, not only you know, threats to shoot Iran, to bomb Iran. It's good that we're having some negotiations in Oman, but the point is that people seem to be unhappy, but at the same not do much. And that is why we see, you know, for example, you know, the UN is not performing its task. Security Council is blocked. We have this Peace Council of Trump, which is, I don't know, it's like an enterprise.
That hasn't fully formed yet. I mean, just to be clear, as the head of the BRICS Expert Council, these are two BRICS members, UAE and Iran, two of the newest members of the BRICS.
Yeah. And, well, I guess they will have to be more done by BRICS as well, because BRICS has to demonstrate its capacity, not just in things during calm times, you know, because we have some, there are a huge line of those who want to join. We have the newcomers, we have 10 countries plus Saudi Arabia in this invited country status. We have 10 partner countries.
Well, how did that happen, by the way? So where we are right now, it's a member of BRICS.
Yeah.
Why is Saudi Arabia not a member of BRICS and Iran is and UAE is?
Well, there were initially 6 countries invited back in Johannesburg. Actually, there were more. Indonesia was invited back then, but it was not publicized as at that point, the previous Jokowi, the previous president before Prabowo, he said that there will be elections soon, so Indonesia will be able to make up its mind completely or claim what it wants only after the elections with a new leader. It would be right to do so. So without Indonesia, it was 6 countries that were pronounced and they were invited. Among them, Saudi Arabia, of course, the ones that are now there, Emirates, Iran, Egypt, and Ethiopia. But we also had Argentina. We had Saudi Arabia. Argentina, when Milei came immediately turned it down. You know, he's like a second, smaller version of Trump, in a way.
Argentina, where actually that gets me neatly on to something slightly different, because I wonder, Argentina is the biggest recipient of World Bank aid.
Yeah, yeah.
I know the IMF has been pouring billions into Zelensky's coffers. I wonder, did you manage to meet up with Kristalina Georgieva, Managing Director of the IMF, and World Bank President Ajay Banga, who were there? I mean, not that the World Bank and IMF is as important as it might once have been.
No, I didn't run into them, but definitely why the NDB rose with the BRICS is exactly because World Bank and IMF are not performing its task. But we can say that a lot of job has to be done by BRICS as well, because when we launched NDB, there was one thing that was like complementary
for World Bank.
New Development Bank of BRICS.
New, yeah.
New. So national, we're not one nation. And then we launched Contingency Reserve Arrangement, CRA, which is in a way an instrument to be similar to IMF, to give out bailout for, you know, when there are financial problems. And so quite a few acts, it didn't start. We had like 7 testings so far. They all were successful, but it didn't come to practice. And in fact, quite a few experts say that, well, CRA of BRICS should have come to the rescue of Argentina, because before it was swallowed by, you know, person like Milei, before it was swallowed by all their IMF, you know, policies that imposed on the country and actually ruining it further down. So
yeah, that's the important aspect, isn't it? I mean, yeah. We've had John Perkins on this show quite a few times, the IMF whistleblower, who explained presumably how you're talking about an NDB is not going to be anything like a torture bad cop, good cop system of the IMF and World Bank using death squads to destroy the livelihoods of millions of people in the Global South, which is the record of the IMF and World Bank.
Yeah, that's the point. But NDB is still too small. There's still a lot to be done. Well, its biggest achievement so far is that this is the only transnational bank, that international one, that doesn't have any Western country inside. It has only BRICS members, by the way. BRICS membership and NDB membership are not equal. You know that. It's a commercial bank, and it does work within the financial system that is imposed by the Bretton Woods Institutes. But at the same time, it doesn't have those political conditionalities that do ruin lives of people. So this is a very important
feature. So is
this
the Dilma Rousseff one?
Dilma Rousseff is now heading it, yes.
Who used to be president of Brazil.
She was president of Brazil, and this is her second term, which was, in fact, it was also a suggestion from Vladimir Putin that she continues in the second term, as it was Russia's turn to come into the bank in order to avoid whatever divergences that might arise. He suggested that Dilma continues to do her duties.
I mean, this is incredible. I mean, the seriousness of BRICS, I think, to some, was illuminated by the kidnapping of the president of Venezuela, Maduro, and his first lady, the first lady, Celia Flores. Because wasn't it Brazil? Lula, President Lula, has been on this show. He hasn't been on since he was on after he was let out of jail.
Okay.
Him voting against BRICS membership for Venezuela, do you not think that allowed Trump to kidnap Maduro?
Well, you know, it's an interesting interplay within Brazil. We talked a lot to our Brazilian colleagues back in during the summit, before and after the summit. We have this civil forum and civil council, BRICS Civil Council, which actually unites from all the BRICS countries, big movements, NGOs, academias, etc. So from Brazil, there is this MST and CebraPass and a number of other movements, organizations that are uniting several million people. So they were all actually demonstrating against such a decision, each and every word.
To veto Venezuela's membership of BRICS.
Yes, they were saying it's a
So why did
shame.
Lula do it?
Well,
and should Brazil be in BRICS?
Well, of course Brazil should be in BRICS. But the point is, I'm talking as an academic, as a scholar, not to be, you know, suspected of intervening into anybody's affairs. But we do know that Brazil has different internal opinions, both of how to work with America, how to work with the BRICS. And Lula's position is not necessarily would be 100% the same of what, for example, people in Itamaraty, the MFA, would have. And it's a kind of a difficult mix of different, you know, work and different approaches from, you know, all kinds of layers of society and different governmental structures. And then acknowledging and saying that, we do not recognize Maduro as a legitimate leader. They were saying it out loud. And then there was this, you remember, there was territorial problem with their nearby state. So all this mix, although I know that from what I remember, Lula and Maduro, they're quite good friends. So, but all of that led to the Brazilian veto. And yes, it happened during Russia's presidency, but nothing. Yeah, it couldn't be done because BRICS is solely acting on their basis of consensus. It cannot be just everybody against, like one person against, well, one country against. It's turned down. It's complete. So, but yeah, Brazil should be there. And we had other countries joining at least as partners. And, well, I don't know what happens to Venezuela now. And I was surprised to tell you that, first of all, there was not much harsh statements. There were only some. And also,
I mean, at the World Government Summit in Dubai, there's, I've got the list here, huge chart, very complicated to understand, I feel. President of Ecuador, Daniel Noboa. I mean, we've had a prior president of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, on this show. Noboa, it's claimed, is a CIA asset. I don't know, did you manage to ask him at the Dubai summit about Venezuela? Plenty of people who are accused of being vassal states of the United States supported the kidnapping.
And the point is that nobody talks about it now. It's a complete silence in the international arena. That's what bothers me most. So it was an illegitimate action. We had, in fact, we had this BRICS Civil Council, we had a common declaration issued in support of Maduro with the demand. But I mean, we're just civil society, we couldn't do much. So it was just one voice in Iman, in the desert of silence. And this surprises me a lot because, and in fact, it does undermine what BRICS is standing for. So BRICS should be taking such issues, such difficult issues, and it should be having more to say on the things that where approaches can diverge, but it has to find a compromise and have to come up. Because if BRICS is not there to stand for the world order, it will be broken. Trump can deal with each one country one-on-one easily, including China. Maybe not easily, but still. But common potential of BRICS is the only one that allows for some joint action to be taken and stopping this gangster activities.
Dr. Victoria Panova, I'll stop you there. More from the head of the BRICS Expert Council, Russia, after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the head of the BRICS Expert Council, Russia, Dr. Victoria Panova. Victoria, you were talking about the importance of BRICS and how important it is for any country, really, to be part of BRICS at the moment. Why do you believe that Trump is calling BRICS anti-United States? I mean, bad advisors, incorrect intelligence. He's terrified of de-dollarization. Why?
Well, I think it's a bit of everything. If you look back into the early stages when the BRICS was just coming out to their world stage, it was taken not really seriously by the Western countries, experts, governments. We're not talking much. If there was some article, whatever discussion, it was like, oh, they will kind of disappear very soon. But, you know, year after year, it started consolidating. It started offering its own solutions to the world. It started having more of its voice, despite whatever differences, because, we were very different. You look at India, China still have differences among each other. The new members, Ethiopia and Egypt, they do have territorial disputes. UAE and Iran, also not like on the best terms altogether. Nevertheless, there's some bigger goal that allowed for the group to stay together. And over the time, they started taking it more seriously and trying to get one by one countries out there, because there was more and more this feeling that BRICS are the threat. Every time, everywhere we go, and we mean it, it's even within the group. We say we don't present any threat. We don't want to kill anybody. We don't want to put down any country. We're not against the West. We're not anti-West. We're just non-West.
But isn't the point that NATO countries want to destroy BRICS countries in general?
Obviously. So they
and BRICS hasn't reacted well enough or speedily enough. I mean, when Russia responded to the NATO provocations on Ukraine, the sanctions on Russia, which Russia is the most sanctioned country in the world, wasn't that the opportunity for BRICS to really start all the acting on all the scholarly papers and procedures and thoughts about what the future of BRICS might be? Nothing seems to have really happened.
It was yet in 2013, it was Durban Summit, that we had created and institutionalized the BRICS Think Tank Council and Business Council. And that's where, by the way, BTTC, I'm also a member of that, we were the ones who offered and suggested the idea of the new development bank. And it came just 2.5 years after we first discussed it in the expert circle. It came to the bin. It was opened, fully opened. All the negotiations were
tiny over. Amount of capital compared, obviously.
It's more about China. But China cannot impose its will in BRICS. This is important. That's why India is okay about it. That is why the rest of the countries are okay about it. So coming back, Trump now, it is a threat. They see something that brings their order down, which is not obedient to them, as a threat. And it looks like, and I read this article by one of Russian experts, Fyodor Lukyanov. He said, well, Trump seems to hate all kinds of organizations. Paradoxically, he hates EU and NATO as well. He tries, and of course,
he likes the CIA, though.
Well, he should. He should like his national, teams and organizations that are subordinate to him. But the point is that when BRICS claims that they want to have an independent payment system, not necessarily de-dollarize. We're talking about using more national currencies. By the way, it wasn't Russia.
Alternative to SWIFT.
Also alternative to SWIFT, but also national currencies, digital currencies. It's just about having a way to trade independently, to interact independently, not to be supervised and be said who you can trade with, who can you cannot. And of course, Trump understands that dollar has been the core, the very fundamental principle of American power. And of course, when a threat of BRICS, which tries to offer, there are at least five different projects that are discussed in different stages now to suggest this payment system.
But ironically, isn't it happening organically outside of BRICS anyway? So that, I mean, I saw...
Enbridge, for example?
And Brazil trade with China, 48% is non-dollar. Russia trade?
China, I think it's 95% in rubles and renminbi.
And Russia trade with India, similarly. But then, I mean, you mentioned...
This is going. National currencies has been there. And BRICS...
But that's not BRICS running it. These are individual...
Well, you know what? BRICS, it was a bit more than a decade ago. BRICS was the first to do this framework agreement between them to move to using national currencies more. Because it was still not so turbulent, the international scene, it kind of went, not for each country, it was important. It was put to their different pocket, further pocket. But China was the one who did not only this BRICS framework agreement, but also, I think at that point, they struck agreements with 22 countries, including outside BRICS, to use renminbi. Russia didn't go away from dollar. It was kind of deprived of it. So it started using its own currency. It started using other currencies. And we're not against the dollar, but we don't want to be ordered by whoever what we should do, what we cannot do. And it was before Trump. It was Biden's administration. But in fact, Trump as well, he contributed to that. So I don't think he can say, oh, it's not, don't blame me, blame Biden. But they started using dollar very explicitly, dollar and SWIFT, as a weapon. Just claiming before this is a public good, it would be available for everybody no matter what's happening. And then they broke their word. You said Russia is the most sanctioned. Yes, over 20,000 sanctions altogether. And I think it's not the end. We're already making fun of it because it's just, okay, how much more there can be. And yeah, but it's a difficult topic. And it's also huge pressure coming from US on each of the countries. And of course, I think UAE would also be cautious moving too much. But each of the BRICS members understands now that this could be turned against them as well. That's why they're moving this direction.
I mean, it's clear, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen Dubai, the amount of trade being done between all these countries. That's what everyone talks about.
But dirham is gaining more in the international scene.
Even though the dirham is pegged to the dollar, ironically.
Yeah.
So it's clear that it's not to do with the value of the currency. Yeah. It's to do with the methods of transmission.
Absolutely.
More. Okay, but then so has Trump given up on his, what did he say? He said, any country aligning with BRICS, 10% additional tariffs, he said in July. He's not going to do that.
100%.
It was 100, then it's 10%. He's clearly not, the United States is no longer powerful enough as a country to do that. 10% unilateral sanctions on all BRICS countries and BRICS aligned countries.
You know, he tries to use it as a weapon, but he claims one thing and then he comes out, it's kind of a bargaining position for him. So you remember he came to Modi saying it was last August, I believe. They said, okay, 25 extra percent of sanctions on you, of tariffs on you because you get Russian oil.
Yeah, but then India said they're not going to buy any Russian oil.
But then they continued to buy.
And I mean, India just proposed a BRICS digital currency, and now they're suddenly not proposing it, are they?
Well, we still have to see because the very first Sherpa meeting will be only 9th, 10th of February, so it's still to come. And
what exactly is that? It sounds like you're going up Mount Everest, right?
Before leaders meet, the biggest event, of course, is the summit when the leaders meet. But for them to meet, there has to be Sherpas that are, you know, personal, very trusted
underpaid
people.
Guides.
Well, in this
where
case,
where is the BRICS summit this year? Actually,
this is India.
Right.
I'm not sure if it will be. From what I know, India wants to diversify and offer different sites, not just Delhi. Although Delhi is quite comfortable, but I remember they had a summit in Goa. It was in 2016. It was a long way to go there, but kind of fun. Even for one day. But in any case, Sherpas, when they meet, they prepare this agenda. They negotiate on all their projects and what will be in the final communique. So it's their job. And there, India will be pronouncing its priorities. They were pronounced once, but in very general form at the UN meeting. BRICS UN meeting in September. But the more kind of detailed thing what India would be doing would be definitely at the first Sherpa meeting. And then we will see how it all goes. What will the ministers be discussing? What will the other working groups and what will come?
But ultimately, would you say, and just finally coming to the end, yeah. Trump has been a good thing for BRICS.
It's a good...
The best thing could have been a Trump White House.
Looks like it, because he's helping to consolidate. Remember when he wanted his Nobel Prize so much, Peace Prize, and he talked to Modi.
Called the War Prize now because it was literally given to Machado.
But you remember he said that one of the eight conflicts he managed to regulate, to settle, was India-Pakistani conflict. And Pakistan bowed and said, yes, we should nominate Trump. But when he talked to Modi about that, Modi was really furious. So it had an opposite, he had an opposite reaction than what was expected. And when he tries to pressure India the way he pressures Europe, it gives opposite effect. Come on, Europe is no longer any significant actor. Sorry, but this is the case. Europe lost its status of a center of power. We have now China, we have Gulf countries, we have India, we have African countries. They have more agency and more status and more say in general among global South, global majority than Europe. And so what he can do pressuring Europe is not possible with either of the BRICS countries. You give up opposite effect. It can consolidate us much more. So he's probably the best agent of BRICS, hired by them. I don't know how much he was paid for that.
He wins the prize. He wins the BRICS prize. Dr. Victoria Panova, thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
That's it for the show. Of course, our continued condolences to those bereaved by this region's UK-US-EU armed genocide. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.